Hey, it's Callie, and you're listening to the 39th episode of the Hippie Haven podcast. If you're new here, I release an episode every Wednesday related to living an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. Previously, we've covered topics like how to go zero waste, environmental activism, preventing food waste, secondhand shopping, starting an eco-business, and so much more. My goal is to inspire and enable you to take action, both in your day-to-day routine and on a larger scale of community activism, because I believe that together we can make a difference to save the planet. If you haven't already, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you automatically get each new episode right when it comes out. Today's guest is Hannah Evans of Population Connection, and we're discussing how the growing number of people on the planet have affected and will continue to affect global warming, and how global warming will affect the human race. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on my website, hippiehavenpodcast.com/039. This episode is made possible by my new book, Starting a Zero Waste Business, Everything I Wish I'd Known, available July 1st, 2019. If you've had this idea for an eco-business rattling around in your head for a while, but you just have no idea how to get started, and honestly, you're a little scared to jump in the deep end of becoming an entrepreneur, this book is for you. In it, I share how I started and scaled my own zero waste business over the last 2.5 years, all the mistakes I've made along the way, the resources I couldn't have survived without, and my tips for success in your journey. To sign up for pre-orders, visit bestowedessentials.com and click on the book pre-order button. As always, thank you for supporting the work I do. Now for today's episode. What is Population Connection? What do you do and how do you do it?
So Population Connection is a U.S.-based nonprofit that is focused on advocating for increased U.S. aid for family planning programs internationally. And in addition to the advocacy work we do, we are also very involved in education and outreach, specifically surrounding population studies, demography, and how population influences the environment, and how global development is ultimately predicated on increased family planning. So we focus on the connections between rapid population growth, access to comprehensive healthcare, and environmental sustainability, and ultimately argue for increased U.S. aid for family planning programs. Part of our organization is very political. We have a field team that's focused in advocating for, college students to sort of rally behind Congress people that are focused on advocating for our mission. We have a PAC, which is focused on directly lobbying Congress. And then we have a C3, which is focused, again, very much on education and outreach. So we work with college professors and students, and then teachers from K through 12 all across the country who are interested in integrating population studies into their classrooms.
And so what is the connection between human population and climate change? How are they affecting each other?
So there are many different ways that population influences the environment and ultimately contributes to climate change. Certainly, the history of population growth is very concerning with regards to climate change and environmental degradation, because increased population growth ultimately means increased consumption patterns, ultimately means straps on, access to resources and things like that. Our organization, we're not positing that fertility rates alone have to do with the onset and perpetuation of climate change. Of course, we recognize that the places that are, that have the highest fertility rates on the planet are also largely, the most marginalized places on Earth. So the premise that these populations are contributing the most to climate change is a fallacy and also sort of a dangerous oversimplification. But we can also recognize that, population growth, again, really does have an impact on the environment in various ways, right? Certainly consumption patterns here in the United States and the rest of the sort of industrialized developed nations, so to speak, are creating many different pressures with regards to the environment. And population growth itself is concerning because the sort of assumption that, developing countries and developing societies will become developed ultimately means increased consumption patterns, ultimately means you know, impacting the environment in various ways and ultimately contributing to climate change. So we try to look at the sort of relationship between population and the environment within a human rights framework, recognizing the sort of complexities that come with this conversation, but also, you know, recognizing the reality, which is population growth has grown exponentially within, you know, the past 200 years alone. And it's not really set to stop anytime soon. And with regards to climate change, which is becoming an increasingly pervasive and increasingly imminent issue, it's something that we really need to consider.
How do you anticipate the effects of climate change, like the rising temperatures, droughts, water shortages, and all of that? How do you anticipate those effects affecting population growth rates?
Well, I think it's going to cause a lot of problems. There's, you know, a whole group of people that are moving and being forced to move away from their homes and their land as a direct consequence of rising sea levels, of rising temperatures, of droughts, of floods, of sort of natural disasters that are unprecedented. And for the majority of the people who are operating in very sort of low economic settings, you know, adapting to climate change, it becomes increasingly difficult, right? I think I read something recently that said that there's over 143 million people that are going to be forcefully displaced within the next 30 to 50 years as a direct consequence of climate change. And so people are in these particular situations are usually moving in country, and that creates a lot of pressure on the environment, right? With specific regards to access to resources and things like fresh water, things like healthcare, things like education, even aside from environmental degradation, all of this is very concerning.
Now, as you've said, there's a lot of misconceptions around population growth and how it's affecting climate change and vice versa. Is there a population number too large for the Earth to support?
That's a really good question. And the answer is, I don't think anyone really knows. There's really not scientific consensus on that. Some scientists posit that the world can hold over a trillion people. Some scientists say that we already have too many people on the planet, that the maximum carrying capacity for the planet is about 500 million people. So there's a huge discrepancy in terms of you know, what people deem as sustainable with regards to a population size. But it is very dependent on the way that people interact with the environment and the rate at which people use resources, right? I mean, if everybody lived like the average American, and I'm sure you've heard this analogy before, we would need multiple Earths to support that type of consumption. And likewise, if people were living more on a subsistence-based lifestyle and diet, the carrying capacity of the planet would likely be much higher, right? But I think the problem arises when we sort of understand that everybody wants to live and consume at rates that are comfortable, right? That rates that we understand as like autonomous and free, that's whenever we sort of encounter an issue, right? So it very much depends on the way that people interact with their environment and the way that people use resources. But a direct number, no, we don't have.
I want to clarify really fast, because the podcast has a wide demographic of listeners. What exactly is family planning?
So family planning is education and sort of medicinal resources that are aimed at allowing people to plan the timing and spacing of their births. So it's a wide range of, you know, healthcare practices and education, but the ultimate sort of foundation is, again, to make sure that people have autonomy with regards to their own reproductive capacity. So they're having children. You know, the fact that they're having children is their choice, when they're having it is their choice, and how often they're having children is their choice.
Or if they're even having children at all, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
How does organized religion affect family planning, both here in America and around the world?
Well, it is a very big influence, of course, as you can imagine. Organized religion is, you know, usually sort of inherently against contraceptives. And so it's been very pervasive in terms of shifting cultural norms in favor of family planning, in favor of reproductive autonomy, in favor of women's empowerment. I will say that I think that the major driver of people accessing resources in terms of healthcare has much more to do with governmental structure and has much more to do with, you know, access in general, right? So places that are very, very Catholic, for example, you know, you can look at a lot of Central and some of South America, their fertility rates, you might expect them to be much higher than they are. They've largely stabilized, and that's in large part because of sort of state-sanctioned innovations in public health and family planning and increases in access.
Can you help us better understand the so-called fact that the entire world's population could theoretically fit inside Texas?
Yes, that is often used to sort of argue against population stabilization or the fact that population growth is an issue. And I think that theoretically, yes, that's true. Everybody on this planet right now could theoretically fit into an area the size of Texas. But that would mean that they would have absolutely no room at all to probably even move, much less live. We have to consider, you know, mobility and the amount of resources it takes to live comfortably, like have a house, have a garden even, have a car, be able to go to work, have schools, right? If everybody was crammed into this tiny little space, there would be no room for any of that. And so to me, it doesn't really make much sense in terms of an argument because it sort of misses the broader point.
Why is it that Americans should be concerned about population growth in other parts of the world?
Well, I think from a human rights perspective, it's very important. And also from a development perspective as well, right? So we're all impacting the environment. We're all contributing in different ways to, you know, the sustainability or not of the of future generations. And from a human rights perspective, you know, populations that are experiencing very, very high fertility, there's a direct correlation between high fertility and institutionalized poverty. If people don't have access to resources, if, you know, patriarchy is heavily institutionalized and women don't have the ability to gain access to education or employment or family planning services or healthcare more broadly, then, you know, that sort of fuels a cycle of poverty that is very difficult to transcend. And from a development perspective, I think that that's, you know, very important to consider because, again, we're all living on one planet. We need to develop and make sure that people have access to the resources they need in order to increase their livelihoods. That has a direct impact on all of us.
How does empowering women directly benefit their communities? And what are some ways that individuals can empower women?
Well, women's empowerment is very foundational to societal development overall. Again, whenever women have access to resources, they oftentimes gain education. They gain, you know, employment opportunities outside of their sort of familial contexts. They are able to participate in the economy at higher levels. Their fertility rates naturally drop. So that increases the health of them as women and also of families. And it just, it's very, very important for the overall social structure of societies in order to develop. You know, without women's empowerment, if women are subjugated and sort of used in a biologically deterministic way, i.e. they're only really allowed to like have children from a very young age until they're not fertile anymore, then that creates a very real sort of paralysis, not only in an individual context and not only from a human rights perspective, but also in a societal one as well. You know, we're sort of subjugating an entire, like half of the population, right? Who could be getting educated, who could again be participating in the economy at higher levels and, you know, theoretically making the country richer to sound, you know, crude a little bit. But the ways that when individuals like here in the United States.
Yeah, the U.S. or other developed countries.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the premise that patriarchy isn't institutionalized here just because we're a developed nation is not true. As we were talking about before, you know, just living here doesn't mean that women have access to resources they need, right? And I would argue that misogyny is very real and pervasive, even still here today. But just recognizing the sort of links between global population and fertility rates and what that has to do with development, and understanding that women's empowerment is very much a part of development overall, I think is very important. I think putting women in empowered roles where they are, you know, have autonomy and are able to participate in the economy in ways that they hadn't before is very important. And just advocating for women role models, I think, for women icons, I think that's very important.
Can you clarify as well, what does the patriarchy mean?
Patriarchy is a social structure that's very common in this world. And it just essentially creates a hierarchy in social structure. So men are at the top and everybody else is below. In this particular society, it would be a white, cisgender, heterosexual male that is at the sort of top of societal benefits, and then everybody's below. But it essentially sort of assumes that men are making the decisions. Men are very much in control of politically, in control of the policies that are implemented that have to do with everyone, and so on.
Can I ask then where people can go to learn about political candidates who are running and what their stance is on these type of issues? Do you have any resources for that?
Yes. People can go to www.iwillfightforher.org. And that is our field team's website. It's brand new. And there you can access resources regarding the different states that we work in, the different politicians that we're advocating for. And you can learn sort of more about the political advocacy that we're doing directly.
And how can my listeners further educate themselves on all the various topics we've mentioned, and how can they support your mission?
Well, you can go to our website and find out how to get involved there. There are several different ways to do that. Www.populationconnection.org. There's a little tab you can click to say, to get involved. You can invite a guest speaker to come to your organization or to your classroom or what have you in order to speak about the sort of conceptual underpinnings of population. You can get involved at the collegiate level with our field team. You can apply for different fellowships and internships. And we also have an entire membership relations team, which is involved in advocating for our members. So if you're a member of ours, which is very easy to do and become, then you can work with our membership relations team to, you know, be active in your community. They can help you set up events, register for tabling opportunities, and so forth if you're interested in doing stuff like that in a more local sense.
And that's a wrap. If you find value in the Hippie Haven podcast, please share it with someone you know who'd be interested. You can leave a review in iTunes or whichever podcast app you're using, and please consider buying me a virtual cup of coffee to keep me going. Each podcast episode takes around 6 hours to create, and episodes cost about $50 each out of my own pocket. These costs include file hosting, editing, transcription for people who need or prefer visual content, and my own time of researching, drafting, recording, proofing, and promoting. Visit buymeacoffee.com/Callie, that's Callee, to support the work I'm doing with a $4 cup of coffee. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart for spending this time with me, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.